Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me as long as you're tuned in to KKNT 960. But this is a car show. This is all about you and your problems with your car. So all you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I checked a good friend of mine from the Looney Tune house today, and I only have him for 3 hours. His name's Tom Blackwell, and he's sitting here next to me. Gil, make sure you got your finger on the kill button. And, folks, if you hear a three-second pause, it's because Tom used bad language. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Marcus.
Yes.
You know, where did the whole brothers of different mothers sharing the same brain come from?
I don't really know. I mean, it probably came from one of my brothers. I don't know.
No, I met you.
Can you read sign language?
I'm looking to... Gil, please don't. You know, one thing that when we used to do, when we first started hanging out, and the broken heart and the crack of dawn.
Yeah, that's mine.
I love that.
That's not yours.
I know, no.
Okay.
I love that. I didn't. All right. I wasn't making claim to it. I'm just praising
it. Okay, all right. The brothers of different mothers, I'm not quite sure where I got that.
Uh-huh.
But I was in the Midwest, and when I was in the Midwest, there was somebody that said the crack of dawn and a broken heart. And I got that. And as a matter of fact, we've got that trademarked.
Uh-huh. Oh, then, do you really?
Yeah. And then downstairs, Renee and Andy were in Texas, and it says something quite different. But it's the same kind of thing. And there's two different examples. We can fix anything except crack the dawn and a broken heart, and this is something else. Mm-hmm. And there's an old guy standing in front of the barn. So it's just, it's, you know, how long have we been in business?
Yeah. Well, you since 1979.
Yep. Yeah?
Me since 1985.
Okay. But you were a tech before that, though.
Yeah.
Okay, you just weren't...
Grew up in the driveway like we all did.
Yeah. Okay. So is that your excuse, or...
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, is that your excuse for why you're missing a couple brain cells as you were in the carbon monoxide?
It was suffocating underneath the dripping transmission fluid.
Oh, okay.
And the hair rolling up. I know that's something we don't share anymore, is the hair rolling up in the creeper, but...
Yeah.
The pulling and tugging.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, I sent you a Corvette with OBD1, 2 or 3?
OBD1.
OBD1. And I said... if Blackwell can't fix it, bring it over, and I can. So where are you at?
And we fixed it.
Okay, what was it?
The mass airflow sensor and the idle air controller were gummed up in it.
Okay.
It was causing a high idle when it's cold. It would not come down off a high idle, or it would go up and not come back down again.
Okay.
And having worked on the older cars, you know, we get to do that once in a while, fix one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
He had some air door issues with it.
Okay.
So, Leo, that, you know Leo.
Oh, I like Leo.
He's a good guy. Yeah. He's a good guy. He makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And he was able to go in and diagnose the old system.
Okay.
And make it work like it should.
All right. So, but OBD1, where are we at today?
We're past that by a long shot.
Okay. And my point is that people hear OBD1, and so OBD1 is like DOS.
Yes.
And we've been through all this Windows stuff, and we've changed our desktop by RAM and motherboards and speeds.
Right.
But OBD1 is like the very first version. And his concern was, is who's got the scanners to plug into the car? And I think I told him, too, that most of them are backward compatible. So we can still use a newer model scanner that costs as much as my first house to read his level one, let's call it level one Corvette.
We had one the other day, and Leo and one of our other techs, they have the newest versions of software in their scanners.
Mm-hmm.
One had been, it was too new. We had to get one of our older scanners to work on it. Speaking about the old stuff, how about EC1,
EC2,
EC3, breakout boxes?
Yep.
Remember that?
All this was in the vicinity of 1992.
No.
76 is electronic ignition, but we didn't have EC until when?
That's until 82 and 83.
Okay. So that was stuff that was completely unfamiliar with us. We had so much input and then output. Mm-hmm. And so you had to first figure out what the output, which one was bad, and then you had to look at the flow chart to find all the input.
Well, that's when we had to do the breakout box. You unplug the computer, you plug one side into the wiring harness in the car, the other side into the ECM in the car, and then you had 100 different sockets, if you will, to go in and check the ground to power for X, Y, Z, whatever it is you were looking for.
We had two probes. And if we wanted the voltage off the mass airflow sensor, then we would hit pin 46 and 91.
Right.
But here's the problem. If you remember, they were all numbers to us. You had to understand what the numbers meant.
Yes. For those that don't understand what that looked like, you ever played the game Battleship?
Uh-huh.
And you remember all the holes in the board?
Mm-hmm.
Well, imagine those holes in the board having numbers on them, and we would go from one pin to another one with these probes and check it. Remember the game Operation?
Mm-hmm.
Where you had to put the two probes in there and not straight. That's what it looked like.
You played that when you were in jail, right? That was one of the...
Well, it was right before I broke you out of the hospital,
okay.
I think, too.
Yeah, we had to tell that story. So I get bucked off a horse, and
bucked off a horse. And you got hurt, and you had to go and to have several things done, of which haven't really, you never really recovered from that. That's okay. We won't get into that. And I get a call from you, colorful call, I might add. Can you please come and get me out of the hospital? So at Maricopa County Medical Center, in the middle of the afternoon, I go in to the hospital, into his room, and take him out of the hospital into the car because they wouldn't let him go against medical advice.
I'm wearing paper clothes.
That have the thing in the back that was supposed to tie that wasn't tied. It's still etched into the inside of my eyelid, and I can never get rid of it.
I wish
I could, but...
I remember my wife wasn't there, which she still hates you for that. But I remember walking out and having doctors kind of... not running interference, but kind of blocking the roadway. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like I was a running back and you were the biggest, baddest. You were the refrigerator. And
tailback.
You're blowing the lines down, and we just walked right out.
Uh-huh.
And that was a bad idea because I didn't take any meds with me. and my head hurt really bad, really bad. But my wife still hasn't forgiven you. She calls you. She has a name for you that I can't use on the radio, but
Loving though. I'm
yeah.
sure.
No, that's okay. It's the same as. But anyway, Tom's at 40th and Greenway. You work on the old cars. Give me an example of a couple of the old cars you got today.
We've done things all the way back into the 20s.
What do you got in the shop today, other than that early model OBD Corvette?
We have a 70 Cutlass. We've got a several Camaros, 168, 69 that we're doing different. You know, various things on them. Excuse me. We are taking and cleaning up the underside of the hood of an original 69 Z28, doing all the stickers and labels and running the wiring harnesses and the clips and so forth and getting the right bolts, the right color, and so on. We have a couple of Corvettes that we've done the rear end in. We've got some older Cadillacs where the automatic temperature control doesn't work. You remember the thumb wheel?
Yeah.
Those things we're working on. So we have just a combination of all types of different things, from just service work. You know, so a guy comes in and wants a oil change, the brakes checked, and the alignment done. And
okay. What's the percentage of new cars versus old cars in the bays?
Today, it's about 60 old and about 40 new.
Yeah.
Today.
We're the flip side of that. We're on the 40 on the old cars. We have a Lotus out there. We're waiting for the bladder for the gas tank. It took us 4 months to find one. And so we've got the bladder. But we had the customer buy it, and the customer's going to come put it in because if you tear it and break it and screw it up, somebody has to buy a new one. And he was willing to do that. Okay, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Harold.
Harold, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a relatively easy question for you. It's a judgment call on a maintenance item.
Okay.
I have a 2008 Jeep Grand Cherokee, 61,000 miles. It has the 4.7 liter V8. This engine is a little unique in that it has two sets of spark plugs.
Okay.
The owner's manual says to change one set every 30,000 miles. The other set you change every 100,000 miles or 10 years.
Okay.
Well, I'm nowhere near 100,000 miles, but I'm well under 10 years.
Okay.
So I kind of like a recommendation. We're looking at about a $250 job to change these plugs.
No, and Tom, you're not going to point at me. They can't see you pointing at me. Just put on your big boy pants and let me have it.
Mark, would you please take this one?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's firing one set of spark plugs on the exhaust.
Correct.
And then he's got one set on the... And I don't know that they had platinum or double platinum or the iridium plugs back in 2000, whatever that was. So I'm not quite sure. I don't agree with the exhaust side at 30,000 miles. I'd take one out and I'd want to see it. And if it was all carboned up, I'd probably do them.
Right. Take the plugs for a test drive.
Why don't you describe that?
Take them out.
We can't talk technical here. We got to talk to your mother. Okay.
I'm trying here.
Take them out and look at them.
First time I've ever done this.
Yeah. Take them out and look at them.
Just take it out and look at them.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to see if the ground electrode has got a lot of wear on the side of it or on the tip.
Which is in the center one. I mean, you're looking at the center one. That's the one that typically wears.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the center electrode.
Okay. So those are, and it's just really a matter, do you have a garage that you deal with on a regular basis, Harold?
Yes, I do. But it's interesting in that I posed this question to them and to the dealership, and they said since I had such low mileage on it, kind of ignored the 100,000 mile or the 10-year thing. That kind of surprised me, frankly.
Okay. Well, that certainly would be a popular response. But Tom and I are saying, why don't we just look at the spark plugs? They'll tell us all we need to know. If the gap's 45 on the primary plugs and the gap is at 60, yeah, we're going to replace them. But on the other hand, if the gap's 45 and the years are 45 or even less, then we're not going to replace them. If your secondary, your emission spark plugs are black and ugly and poopy, then yeah, we're going to do them. But if they've got a light tan to them and they're still firing, then the answer's no. So I think you're really up against that. But anyway, thank you very much, Harold. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. We have open lines, and I think we have five lines, and you're going to talk to Gil. And don't use any bad language to Gil because he just got out of prison, and he was in there for a violent crime. And plus, he has caller ID, so be nice to Gil. 602-508-0960.
Under my hood, and he shook his head and said, this
welcome
ain't
back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Tom Blackwell, Mark Salem here at your service. You're welcome to give us a call. Sue, you hang on, but I'm going to talk real quick about Thompson's Auto Repair. He's on Main Street, just east of Stapley. I've known that family for probably 30 or 40 years. Brian and Thelma came from two different families. Obviously, they're brothers, or they're not brother and sister, but they're husband and wife. And Brian and Thelma's fathers and grandfathers pumped gas and opened up some of the first bays in the Mesa area. So those kids have been around longer than I've been around. So he's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend, Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let's get Sue on the line. Sue, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hi, good morning. I have a 2008 Kia Sportage, and I took it in on Thursday. The airbag warning light was on.
Okay.
And they replaced, I think it's called a clock spring.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So when I picked it up, I had several errands to do, turning it off and on all the time. And then later that night, my daughter took it out, and it wouldn't start. The key wouldn't turn. So is there any connection what they did?
Let me have the first shot at this, Tom. What I want you to do is the key wouldn't turn. So what I want you to do is put your hand at 12 o'clock on the steering wheel, and I want you to push it left and push it right while you try the key. Because sometimes when you park with your tires up against a block or a curb or something like that, and the steering wheel is bound up. And so if you just turn your key on, put your key in on normal position, and pull that steering wheel hard to the left, and then all of a sudden the key now works, then that's what it is. Tom?
Think of it this way, Sue. If you were pulling on the door handle, trying to open a door and turn the knob at the same time, it would be harder to turn. That's what's happening mm-hmm. with the lock in the steering wheel. Whenever it's got pressure in the steering column up against the key won't turn. And I've had several of those come in over the years. More than what's not on a Kia, but a lot of different cars.
And almost always, it's that sloped driveway or something like that, where they make a hard right turn into a sloped driveway, and then they put it in park, and the car backs up and relaxes, and then they take their key out. And then the steering wheel jerks, and you know that it's locked up
right.
at that point. This, yes, they were in that area, Sue. Yes, they had the steering wheel off. Yes,
right.
they probably had the ignition switch, which is the part you stick the key into. Yes, all of that. Now, if you can't move the steering wheel left and right, and I'm talking about the width of your finger, so you turn it left, it's a half an inch or so, turn it right half. If you can't do that, then it would be appropriate for you to call them and say, I've never had this problem before. You did the clock spring. You had the steering wheel off. I can't turn the key, so I would be really happy if you'd send either somebody over to look at it, or if you'd send a tow truck and take a look at it, because it's never happened before. That would be the kind way to say it.
I did call them and ask them if they would tow it. And they said, well, if it's not their fault, then I would have to pay for the tow truck.
So
I'm already trying to get out of it.
Okay, this is what I do. I would say, you know what, I'll just tow it somewhere else. And if it is your fault, you can pay the bill. And at the same time, stop payment on your credit card until we get this thing sorted out. They're going to rather tow it in and pay a bill than pay Blackwell's bill for the $700,000 he's going to charge you to fix it. And I'm kidding mm-hmm. you, of course. So you can play, if they want to play hardball, that's the way to play hardball. You know, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in Peoria.
Okay. I would say there's a Central Phoenix repair shop that I've used that I really like. I think I'll just tow it there. And the guy at the dealership's going, Peoria to the center of Phoenix, that tow bill ain't going to be a small one. So the idea is, but if you're uncomfortable, you can take it anywhere you want. Stop payment on your credit card and wait till this is all straightened out. And then if it's something that Mark's wrong about, Tom's wrong about, then you can open it or go back in and have them swipe your credit card. If not, you'll have their attention.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll try the steering wheel thing first.
Okay. Would you call us back today and tell us if we were right? Because Tom hasn't been right in the last 3.5 years, so it would be nice that we gave him credit for that. Is that okay with you?
Well, I hadn't planned on going out.
I understand. But if you want to just try to see if wiggling the steering unlocks the key switch.
Well, it happened the one time.
Okay.
Finally, my daughter messed with it long enough after she had called a tow truck and had to cancel it. But she finally did get it turned, started.
Okay. Well, then it's too late to run our test. And I think what I would do is I would pull up to the driveway, and I'd put it in park, take my foot off the brake, and let the car settle before you turn the key off. And if you let the car settle, then chances are it won't happen again. Anyway, Sue, that's the best we can do. We're going to guess the best we can, and you've given us a good description, so that's kind of nice. But what threw the curve into it is your daughter messed with the key and got it to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the evidence has been destroyed, so to speak.
Yeah, so we're not, on the other hand, if we had been involved a little earlier, then you'd say, yep, that did it. And so at that particular point, we would be quite sure that it wasn't the job of it. Now, the clock spring inside your steering wheel, we have to have the airbag connected to the airbag module. And obviously, when you turn the steering wheel left and right, we have to have some mechanism underneath the steering wheel to allow that connection to remain the same. So the clock spring is literally looks like a clock spring. So even though you're moving the steering wheel, it has constant communication with the part of the steering column that doesn't move. So the clock spring probably set off an airbag light.
Airbag light, yep.
And the
very common repair.
Yeah, it is a very common repair. And so it's just a matter of pulling the steering wheel off. But you have to diagnose it. So you have to go in and put up a computer, and you have to talk to the computer and say, hey, do you see the airbag? And it goes, no, I don't see the airbag, and so forth and so on.
And that's what the process is.
Yeah, that's part of the diagnostic
And it's
process.
It's a common repair, actually. At least I think it is a common repair for an airbag light on.
And she's an 08, so is my math right? 13 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yep. We kind of lose sight of that 13-year, 10-year mark and stuff like that because we look at the mileage and say, oh, it's just young. But it's not young. It's been through how many summers and how many winters.
How many cycles.
How many cycles and all that kind of stuff.
And how many times has a wheel turned in 10 years?
Yeah.
All the way one way, all the way the other.
Yeah.
Really, when you think about it, it's a very well-made part. When you think about what it does and how much the cycles that it goes through.
Yeah, and what's nice about that is if you have an airbag light and you lose control, if the computer loses sight of the steering wheel, it will tell you. And that light, I don't know if it's orange or red, but I'm thinking it's orange, which means you can have it fixed somewhere down the road. But a red light, like an oil pressure, that means stop right now.
Stop right now.
Yeah, so that's the difference in the dash lights. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. The lines are wide open, and there's five of them. So you'll talk to Gil, and he'll answer the phone saying, KKNT, do you want to talk to Mark and Tom? And you say yes. And don't use any bad words, at least then. You can do them later on, and that really keeps Gil on his toes. So 602-508-0960. Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway.
Greenway.
I know. I'm looking at the screen. You know, if you're going to correct me, I'm going to turn off your microphone. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. Mark Salem and Tom Blackwell here at your service. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street in Glendale. If I keep saying that, I keep looking at the sheet, and I know it's Greenway, but I see the G. And what are you saying?
I didn't say anything. I didn't correct her.
I know, but you use sign language, and that one finger is not a salute. It's something I understand.
It's communicating.
Okay, fair enough. I guess I should turn the speakers off in the studio because Gil's going to get mad at me. Real quick, let me talk about Automatic Transmission Exchange, who's at downtown on Washington, and Phil's been around since Fred Flintstone. He's worked on all the automatic transmissions since day one. Do you remember what the first one was?
It was a Hydromatic.
Yes. Yeah.
Hydromatic. We're going back into the 40s.
And I was thinking it was the Power Glide, but the Power Glide came in the 60s, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so we had an automatic before that. But nevertheless, if you want to have a transmission shop, take a look at it. Obviously, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are probably not a good time to go by there, but Automatic Transmission Exchange is there for you. And let's go to the phones. John, thank you for calling. How can we help you?
Good morning, gents. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
An easy couple questions for you.
Okay.
I think. I have a Lexus LS460, 2010, 85,000 miles. I would rate the condition very good. I am told that I need to replace several things. Firstly, I am told that I need to replace the high-pressure fuel pump gaskets.
Okay.
And
wait, let's do one at a time. Let's do one at a time.
Yeah.
You got any comments or questions, Tom?
What is the symptom that you have whereby somebody said you need to replace the high-pressure fuel pump gasket to correct?
Good question. I noticed nothing mechanical. What I see and what the dealer sees when they, you know, open the hood, they say, gee, you've got an oil film developing. If that gets bad, you could have a fire. And I'm like, well,
I don't know.
Wow, okay. I don't have dripping oil. I have an oil film, you know.
How many miles are on it?
Well, 85.
Okay. Are you going to finish this or you want me to take it? I'm a little bit more abrasive than you are.
Do you see any oil drops on the ground?
No, I do not.
Yeah. Okay, this is really, let me give you some self-defense for car expense.
Okay.
There's two things you do. Number one, what symptom are you going to fix with this repair that I'm going to notice? Number two, would you write the estimate down on a separate piece of paper, what the labor is, what the parts are, and all that kind of stuff, and hopefully the total amount, and then just initial it and put your extension number there. And save my old parts, please. And I'm telling you what, 9 out of 10 times they won't do any of that. And I'm not talking about dealerships. I'm talking about independent shops, chain stores, and dealerships. And the first question is what symptom do I have that you're going to fix? And see, what happens is the technician is going to shop your car. Then it goes to the dispatcher. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to, hopefully it goes to the mechanical supervisor. And so that would be the, it's not the shop foreman. It's really the service manager, I guess, would be it. The shop foreman's involved, and then it goes to the service writer, who may or may not have any mechanical skills at all. And the service writer is a parrot to give you that information. So Tom and I are of the opinion that you don't have any symptoms for that. And if all you've got is a weeping spot in oil where the oil is just a film and nothing's hitting the ground or anything around it, then we're both going to vote no.
Very good. If I had it, and I don't, if it turned into a drip, does that merit the change, or just sit tight until it really gets bad?
It's up to you. If it's hitting the ground, then there's always a possibility the oil goes to the cat, and the cat can set it on fire, and then you and your wife are going to abandon the car faster than if it was a ship. But then again, you know, if you want a new car, another 2010, then that might not be a bad idea.
Well, you know, I think I need a place in town that does work on Lexus cars. I don't know where to go.
Where do you live?
I haven't had issues before. In Gilbert.
Okay. I don't have anybody in Gilbert.
I'll drive anywhere I need to go.
Okay. You can go north to Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. And then I'm embarrassed to tell you, but I'm at Warner and I-10, so you could call there and get an appointment, but Thompson's is probably closer to you, and Brian and Thelma are really good people, and I have no problems. Do you have something else that they gave you?
And this is even easier. They said, sir, you've really got to change your oil pan gasket, and that's a $500 bill. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I'm looking at it under the car with them. I'm thinking, okay, if it weeps, it's weepy. Huh. I'm not losing oil, but I that's why I say I've got to get to a place where they're reasonable.
Okay, how old are you?
Well,
approximately.
I don't think I can do it myself.
You're reading into it. How old are you?
50.
Okay. There has been times that I have investigated on behalf of law enforcement and others, and it seems to be an age issue. The older you are, the more you're likely to be sold something. So I was just asking you for that reason. I'm not expecting you to crawl underneath it. You should look them in the eye and you say to them, I don't have anything on the ground. Would you ask the technician to explain that? And there's going to be a whole lot of on the front side of that discussion. So,
well, I got lots of gray white hair, so maybe that qualifies me.
Yeah, if your wife thinks you look 40, but some of the other guys that play golf are 65 and they invite you, then somewhere along the line somebody's making a judgment call. This is something that happens all the time. Tom, in the last week, have you looked at someone else's estimate on behalf of the car owner? And we're going to answer this in a minute, and you're going to say, what was the relationship between what I saw and what I didn't? And I want to tell you something, John. I think that half the shops in town really are looking out for your best interest, and there's a whole lot of shops that are looking out for their own, and that's really the difference. Can you stay right there? You're first, 602-508-0960. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Tom Blackwell here at your service. We've got some lines open. We have two of them, 602-508-0960. Harker's Automotive is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. I've told you before that they had a BMW in there that had an estimate of $2,000 or $3,000 because it had water leaking out of the dash, and they were going to do a heater core. They found that the condensation tube that comes from the dash that's supposed to drain the water from your air conditioning system was plugged up. They unplugged it. The bill was less than $50, and it was worth having a second opinion.
Second opinions are vital.
Yeah,
aren't they?
On something big, really big. Oil changes.
And it's okay to ask for a second opinion.
You're right. You're right. Okay, let's go to the phones. Ken, thank you for calling. How can we help you?
Oh, good morning. I've got a 91 Ranger with the 3-liter V6.
Okay.
About 100,000 miles on it.
Okay.
On a day of errands, probably 7 stops and then get back and restart.
Okay.
That 7th one, I just got, you know, loud click.
Okay.
Did that several loud clicks. And then I remember you talking about hammers. So I crawled underneath of it and gave the starter a solid couple of hits on the side near the back end. Got back in the seat.
Okay.
Started, and it started right up again for 6 more times.
Okay.
So what do I do?
Well, first of all, I think you should admit that your Ford came with a hammer in the toolkit, and that's something that Tom and I can't believe that a 91 Ranger is still on the road.
But you're enjoying your car, Ken, and that's Mark. Don't let Mark take that away from you. Don't let him steal your joy.
Okay.
Okay. Now I am an advocate for everybody else. The starter's going to make no noise when you ask it to crank, or it's going to click, or it's going to go slow. Those are the 4 symptoms.
These are the questions that I have.
Okay.
Or that I wonder about.
All right.
1, how many stops in what period of time?
Okay.
Because the battery didn't have a chance to recover. If it's a little on the weak side, let's assume that for a second.
Okay.
So start 1, pretty good. Start 2, a little worse, and a little worse. All the way to 6, where it doesn't start at all.
Okay.
The time it takes to go get the hammer, hit the starter, maybe it recovers a little bit. Maybe it's hot, because it started so many times in a short period of time, gives it a chance to cool down. So I think we ought to check the battery, the charging system, and run the vehicle and check the starter when it's hot. But even when it's cold, if it's bad, it's going to draw more amperage than it should.
Okay.
So you're going to have a pretty good indication. Those are the things I think we should do, right?
And the electrical systems test. You're talking about an electrical systems check. How much?
It could be less than $60, depending on where it is in town.
I think the market's somewhere 45 to 65,
most all
of us. Battery, alternator, starter, amps and draws, run a ground test, all the stuff you look for.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking for performance on each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to remind you that he said, I listen to you a lot, and I understand the hammer routine. So and I know it was a battery hypothesis, and I know it was you were talking about a battery.
Right.
But now that you know that he hit it and it started up and it wasn't the battery, what would it likely be if he told you that?
If it was not the battery?
It clearly isn't, because once he started hammering on the starter, it started up.
We have a disconnect between the brushes and the starter and the armature.
Or the solenoid.
Or the starter solenoid.
Yeah.
But if the starter solenoid, you have to be on the starter if it made... If that repair, so to speak, fixed it, because some starters, like in his car, I think the starter's up by the battery.
No, it isn't.
On the Ford?
You just said the starter's up by the battery?
No, starter solenoid.
You didn't say solenoid. You said starter.
I meant starter solenoid.
I know you did, but
here you are correcting me.
No,
it's a come.
Okay, write down.
Listen,
3403. That's on the tape here, and we'll go through. I waited for that because I knew you were going to say starter. I just could tell by your face you're going to say, "Oh, the starter's on the." I agree with you. I thank you for bringing that up. The solenoid is on the fender. That's a completely different location than the starter.
Uh-huh.
So him hammering on it has to be the brushes. And he needs a starter.
Right. That's what. That, yeah. We, I agree.
We agree with that, Ken. And we're sorry to make fun of your Ranger and the hammer joke and stuff like that. But both of us agree.
So what my question is, Ken, is this hammer brass with a bunch of leather wrapped around it? Because that would be back in the old days, right? Like in the 20s?
Yeah.
They actually sold that hammer to go along with all those vehicles.
The Fords.
The Ford leather-wrapped brass hammer.
Yeah, they never did that on any other car. But, Ken, I am 99.9% sure that a starter will fix your problem. Tom?
I agree.
Okay.
Yep.
But, Ken,
okay.
Nobody
Great.
Ever...
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Ken, thank you for that, because nobody gives us that information. Very
that is,
few times.
That is perfect. That's what everybody should do, is fill in all the spots with us. Tell us when, what, where, why, and how. That helps us immensely help you.
We don't get guys to duplicate the noise, but the women have no problem. They, you know, you ask them to click, 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 or roar, roar. I mean, they'll do the noise. Mm-hmm. The guys will tell us how to fix
right.
it.
Help. What movie this in, was this in? Help me help you.
Oh, that's...
Help me help
yeah.
you.
And
that's
if you just answer my questions, just and don't tell me what Google said or YouTube said or what your uncle in Kentucky said. Let's talk about the symptoms. That's us.
Short and sweet.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. Nick, you're up next. How can we help you?
Nick, Mark, I have a 2006 Chevy Colorado with about 785,000 miles on it.
Okay.
Replace the engine at 475, but I'm sure the cats and everything are original. I'm getting a 420 catalytic converter code.
None of the front side.
Other than
that...
O2 sensors, other than the O2 sensors and the catalytic converters. Is there something else that could be causing that?
Well, there's a list of four or five things, but I think it's foolish to check the cat or check the, or do the O2 sensors. What are you going to do first, Tom?
We're gonna scan it.
Okay.
We're gonna find out what's behind the code.
Okay.
Okay. Is it fuel? Is it timing? Does he have something going on mechanically again? Is there an exhaust leak, but it's what's behind the code. We got to find that out first,
okay.
rather than just start replacing parts.
We're going to get a code, and it's going to be a cat code. What we do know is coming in should be rich. That's one number. They're 1 through 5 for the sake of just argument. We're getting 1 through 5. Low is lean, 1, and high is rich, 5. It's easier to explain it that way. So we got rich coming in, and on the backside, we should have lean going out. And if we don't have the change of very rich in and very clean on the outside, then you have to figure out why. It could be running rich. It could be the O2 sensor problem. One or both of them are dead. It can be an air problem.
Or it could be the cat.
It could
and
be
for
the
those,
cat.
This terminology is, when we're talking before and after the cat, upstream O2 sensor going in, downstream O2 sensor coming out.
Okay.
And you'll pick those bank one, bank two, upstream
mm-hmm.
drivers, downstream, pass, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. The repair, I'm guessing, you do both O2 sensors, going to be 3 times as much as the diagnostic on that. But when he says we scan it, what he's mean is we're looking at the performance value of all these different sensors, but it comes to us in a number. And unless you understand that 2 is good and 5 is bad, or 5 is good and 2 is bad, then you're not going to really know. But my bet is, what would the diagnostic be on a cat code?
Everybody in town between $125, $175, that would be a normal diagnosis.
Okay. What happens if it only takes you 25 minutes and you got to heat it up and go drive it, then you bring it back in and you're not really seeing anything, so you go drive it again and you kind of hot rod it a little bit, you bring it back in, and now all of a sudden you see everything. Is that the 120, 125?
120, 125, yeah, okay. Because you're not paying for somebody's guesswork. You're paying for what they know.
Okay.
What they're trained to do.
I understand.
That's just part of it. Maybe it's an easy diagnosis on one, mm-hmm. and it's a more difficult diagnosis on another. Well, guess what? That's you're still in that range.
And I think it's a good business practice to aim high and come in low.
You always want to come in as, you always want to be a hero rather than a villain.
Exactly, exactly. Well, anyway, Nick, that's what we think, but I don't believe a word he said when he said he did 700,000 or he's got 700,000. I'm teasing you.
Trust me. 785, and the only thing I was going to comment about it, like when I'm on the freeway, like going 65, 70, the thing runs like it was brand new. So I don't know if running rich and then it just compensates air.
No, you're
to
talking.
To balance it out?
No, go.
Have those converters ever been replaced? If they haven't,
no.
You have gotten way, way more. They have done you no wrong at all.
And when you start analyzing this rich and lean condition, you don't really have a flavor. We can have a rich condition and you won't even know it, but we're flooding the cat with fuel and it can't man. It's kind of like, it's like your grill, your steak thing. If you add a whole bunch of fuel, it's going to get really hot, but it may get too hot. The issue really is there's a simple and an easy way with gray hair on your head and maybe a little gray hair on your chest. This isn't going to be a tough one. You're going to have to drive it. You're going to have to go through at least one cold start and warm up, a full heat cycle, we call it. But what he talked about, I agree 100%. There is so many variables. And if you want to guess, go ahead. We like you when you come into the shop and tell us that you've replaced everything in the world, and then we plug a vacuum line in to fix it. We're kind of the hero, and you go home and tell your wife that the bill was $1,000. So that's kind of what happens. But really, I think you're far better off to have somebody look at it. Joe, you're up next. Joe, how can we help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a 2004 F-150 Heritage model.
Yes, sir.
And
2 minutes.
The headlights are glazed over pretty bad.
Okay.
Can you recommend someone to buff them out or replace them?
Tom?
Many body shops, many repair facilities can put headlights in. And they could replace headlights, and they could be, depending on the vehicle, anywhere from $100 for the part or $400 for the part. As far as cleaning them up and buffing them, that's a very easy, simple thing to do. There's kits that you could buy at AutoZone or O'Reilly's or NAPA or whoever, and you can do it yourself. So there's many variations in there that you could take care of. Buy the kit for $25 and a little elbow grease, or go all the way up to what they call Kappa certified,
okay.
Right?
I
on the cheap headlights or the factory ones?
I disagree with you.
Okay, tell me.
And you're right. You can put $400, $500 worth of covers on your headlights.
No, headlights, replace them totally.
No, I understand.
Or 1 minute.
The covers.
The front of them.
Oh, okay. 3M makes a kit.
Right, a bra.
It's
headlight bra. Okay, go ahead.
3M makes a kit to buff the headlights, the plastic covers over them. Okay? And we charge $89 for the two headlights, and we give a guarantee this way. If you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. And it lasts virtually forever. We've never done one twice. But the kit, never mind, is $1,500, and the product is you have to add to it as well. But we do that 3M kit. But the stuff at AutoZone, well, the stuff at the auto repair or the auto parts store, it's a tissue off of a roll of paper that has a little armor all on it, and you rub it on there, and it looks good for 4.5 minutes. So just take that and.
You know, it depends
Wait
on
a minute.
Whether it's
we're up
northern.
We're up against a break, and so I'm going to have to shut you off right now. See you later, and we're going to be back for another hour right after this. Of us, we can probably give you a good idea of what you're faced with as long as you stick to the symptoms and kind of tell us what the year, make, and model, how many miles you've got. That kind of stuff is kind of important. I want to clear something up. It appears that the process you use is either exactly or very similar to the 3M I'm using, because during the break we talked about the process and the steps.
Yeah, you have different grits of sandpaper that go on the end of it. You know, light, the lower number is heavier grit. It's rougher, and then a higher grit is smoother, and it could go from 600 or 400 or 12 to 3 or 4 or 5,000 grit the smoother the plastic is or the surface is before you put the lotions and potions on, the better the outcome is going to be.
Right. So for I you're getting the point that we don't have visuals here. So the sandpaper will sand the skin off of you, or it'll polish your glasses. That's your different grits.
Right.
So you just create that kind of stuff. And so I want you to behave yourself, but Kurt's Auto is at Bell and I-17. I tell this story time and time again. Lady says she's told by three different shops she needs an engine. What should I do? She's close to Kurt's. Go over to Kurt, and Kurt put an oil pressure switch in it. I think the bill was $50, give or take 100. I don't know. But anyway, he saved her a motor, and since then she's been a customer, and also she thinks I walk on water. But the fact of the matter is if you're going to be faced with an engine and you don't really have any knocking noise or oil leaks extraordinaire, it's time to get a second opinion. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Annie's on the line, and real quick, hang on, Annie, but go.
Very quickly, I heard this the other day from one of my service writer. When a customer comes in and they ask, okay, we've got a code P40... and we need to replace this part. So, no, hold on a second here. This is how we look at it. It's like you telling me you live in 85032 zip code. Do you know how many people live in 85032? Mm-hmm. We have to find out which house that is. We got to go look it around for it. That's what we're looking for behind the code.
And the other is if your husband told you how to fix the car, I liked your credit card first. And the success of this repair depends on his ability to diagnose your car. So I'm more than happy to fix it like your husband said. But I want to tell you, his chance of success is about mine if you lived in Denver, Colorado, and you told me that you had this code. Because everybody chases the code. The mass airflow sensor is the bellows is bad in the air intake. And the MAP sensor is bad because the vacuum lines come off. So all that kind of stuff. You're right.
Those are the houses in the zip code.
Yes. Annie, good morning. How can we help you this morning?
I have, or my husband has, a 1996 XJ6 Jaguar.
Okay.
He has 78,000 miles on it.
Okay.
He drives about 3,000 miles a year.
Okay.
It just is putt-putt around town. It costs, I don't want your hair to go white. You probably already know this. It charged for him to have an oil lube job done. It's about $190 where he goes. He actually checked in another place the other day, and they wanted $350. But my question to you is because the car sits in the garage, and yes, the garage gets to be 90 degrees. Does he have to have the oil changed twice a year with such low mileage,
okay.
Or can we? Once a year.
Okay, I'm first. How much it spends in the garage is not important to me. It's really important that's your 3,000 miles a year. I'm figuring at the prices they have to be putting synthetic in it, synthetic oil. Now, let me just ask you flat out, and I don't want a book. How much for that car, and what services are you providing with the oil change? Any time is fine.
In regard to with me?
Yeah, you. Yeah. I'm talking to you.
How many services are going to be in with that $350?
What do you do with an oil change, and how much is that XJ going to cost?
We're going to take and check all the fluids in it. We're going to take and obviously change the oil. We're going to rotate the tires if it needs it. We're going to
check
look
the brakes while you're there.
Check the brakes. We're going to take and look at the belts and hoses and test the brake fluid to make sure it's strip tested to mm-hmm. see if it's good or bad. Look at the power steering fluid. Same thing with the transmission fluid and so on.
You check the tires, the brakes, all the fluids, the belts, and the hoses, and anything else. You give it a good look over. How much?
$100.
And I'm
$25, how many quarts of synthetic does it have?
I don't know, but I'm going to open it up. And I always talk the market. I think most everybody that I know in the market's between $100 and $125.
Uh-huh.
But we're a long way away from what she's paying, from $190 north of that.
It's all what are they doing? What are they selling? What's their menu option for that?
Well, what else are they doing for the money? I've got you got a tire rotation and check the brakes in it. You got fluids, belts, and hoses.
What else and how far are they on a 93?
Okay, all right. So the answer to your question is neither one of us likes the dollar amount you're spending. Neither one of us thinks that's justifiable, but. If they're doing anything extra, if they're scanning the computer, doing tailpipe tests, if they're rotating your tires, if they're doing samples of your fluid to analyze, you might get there. but at 3,000 miles a year, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on your car.
Now, I'm sure that you love your husband, otherwise you wouldn't have married him, right?
Are you talking to me?
To her.
Oh, Annie.
Her.
Okay.
To Annie, yeah.
Okay.
Gee, man, love her. Christmas. You love your husband dearly. Now, this is just how I think about Jaguars. If you really loved your husband, you'd get rid of the Jaguar and buy him something cool.
And I want to tell you something. Tom is the furthest thing from Tom is the furthest thing from a marriage counselor you want to listen to. Okay? He doesn't even get along with me. God bless his wife, Polly. Gee, many Christmas. And so
he just likes, you know, the 1996, it's that traditional looking Jag.
Yeah.
And he looks good in it, and it's good for the run to the grocery store these days. I mean, doing much of anything else.
Okay, let me get this straight. You like the idea that he looks kind of manly in the Jaguar. How many years have you been married?
37.
Oh, that explains it right there. You're not scared of him catting around on you after 37 years.
Plus, he is older than I am, too.
Oh, my God.
No, is he one of those silver-haired devils?
Silverhead. I want to tell you my Jaguar. We bought an XJ4, XJ6. I don't remember. XJR. It's the blown one.
It was the XJR.
One. Yeah, XJR, supercharged one. The fastest, nicest running, smoothest ride car we've ever had. My wife absolutely loved that car. I've never spent as much money fixing things on any car I've ever owned. And I know in our customer file we have north of 45 cars since 1991. Some of them are shop cars and stuff. I've never spent so much money on a car. But at 3,000 miles a year, he's not going to hit the kind of mileage that Renee did.
Yeah.
If you love him, then still love him. But tell him. Let me ask you a question. What part of town are you in?
Paradise Valley.
Oh, well, you're right around
right
the corner.
Right along Lincoln. You know where the Franciscan Renewal Center is?
Yeah. Tom Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenway, just north, 40th Street. I'm going to tell you right now, your first oil change is $125. I'm telling you that right now.
Okay.
And if it's over $125, I'll pay the difference. Okay?
Oh, okay.
All righty. Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Glendale, or 40th Street and Greenway. I'm sorry, Greenway, and ask for Tom himself, and he will give you the blue carpet. What do I want to say?
It's red carpet.
It's red carpet. Yeah, red carpet.
Red, white, and blue.
White glove service.
So
red
much.
Carpet and
correcting.
And white gloves. Okay. And
okay, so 40th and Greenway. Blackwell Automotive,
yep.
Tom.
Yep, 125, okay, anything above that. Now, this is an oil change. This isn't a tire rotation, flushing the cooling system, flush the injectors, and all that kind of stuff. This is oil, lube, and filter along with labor. I'm just making sure Tom understands because he's got this look on his face that he's already figuring out he's going to clip me for a couple hundred dollars. So, all righty, Annie, good luck. Good luck.
I appreciate both of your intellects. And it's fun to you on the radio. And as a woman, you do a lot of educating, and it's very much appreciated. Thank you.
That's the nicest compliment I've had in a long time. And thank you. I know it was sincere. And that's the objective of this show, is help people. It's called self-defense for car expense. How can it be any? How does it explain any different?
We can help you understand. We can help you be comfortable and be empowered. That's what we want to do.
And asking the right questions, and more important, I think you'll agree, Tom, is what to ask, question, but what not to say. You don't say, my husband said this is what he wants done. Well, what symptom are we trying to fix? And then the answer is, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the front counter, it's always great that you get to what you're in for.
2 minutes.
I went to the store to get milk for my the cake I'm making and so on. That's we like. If you could just bring us the cake that you made, that would be great. But if you could just tell us just what's going on, it's doing this.
Okay. And so I know that you go to the store a lot for Polly, your wife's beer. Is that all you get her, or do you get some popsicles for you?
Oh, no,
or,
she likes the wine.
The wine. Okay.
Right.
All right.
A lot of it.
Okay. All right. Well, I know
I
that
like it
she
gets
shops
a lot of it too.
She shops at a store that has toys in it for you. I don't know. That's what I heard from Polly. Okay. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You're welcome to have one of the fives. Gil will take care of you, and we'll be back. Oh, wait a minute, Gil. Am I bailing early?
Yeah, you still have a minute and 10 seconds.
Oh. Can I give it back to you now? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'll take the minute and 10 seconds on the other end. We'll be right back. Definitely. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem, and we're here to help you, 602-508-0960, and I'm going to get to the callers, but first I'm going to talk about Action Auto Repair I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. I know him, I know his family, I have his cell phone number, and he's a good guy. So he services that Deer Valley and North Phoenix area. So if you don't have a shop, may I suggest you stop by Action Auto Repair, the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. Simply get an oil change or a tire rotation and see how you fit and how they comply with your expectations. That's Action Auto Repair. Steve, you're up first. How can we help you?
Yeah, good morning. I got a 2004 Mazda Tribute, 77,000 miles. For the first time, I went to get emission tested. Their plug-in monitor is not connecting to the OBD. They can get the information from the hand scanner, but in order for it to pass, they need to plug into that little plug-in pin. Is there a way to swap that out, or can you adjust those pins, or could it be possibly something totally different?
Well, wait a minute, Tom. I think he said that they plugged their big computer harness into the assembly line data link, but that didn't
work,
so they have a handheld scanner that they plugged into the same port.
Tells me that the plug-in, that their plug is not communicating, not the car has a problem. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, and Steve, think about it that way. We plugged two different devices into the same plug, and one worked and one didn't.
Well, the handheld scanner, I don't think they didn't do the. I've been to three different locations to get certified. The first one, they tried it in three different ports. They were saying it wasn't connecting. I took it to a shop. They used their handset scanner and said, yeah, it's working fine. I took it back to 59th and Bell. The guy says, oh, it's not connecting with our thing. Even though it's connecting with the hand scanner, go to 27th and Peoria because they have a waiver lane. So they said they had a hand scanner. So I went to that Peoria location, and the guy says, well, we do have a hand scanner, but it needs to connect into that plug with our big machine. They could not use the hand scanner.
Okay.
However, the hand scanner doesn't get it, so you're thinking it might just be that plug or possibly a fuse.
Well, now think about it. Half the scanners can talk through that connection, and the other half can't talk through that connection. So I can't answer your question. Can you answer it?
No. He has no check engine light on because he didn't talk about that.
Right.
Nobody else can
no
find it either.
No check engine light.
Okay. Who are those guys? Aren't you one of those emission shops where people can have their cars done and stuff like that?
The VVR program?
Yeah.
VVRP is what it is.
Okay. Well, what does it stand for?
Voluntary Vehicle Emissions Repair Program.
And so they bring it to you. You do some work on it. And then if you need to, you take it to the waiver station and get it through. Am I close?
No. They help out in the repair for anybody.
Okay.
The customer pays the first $150. The county pays the next $550. Beyond that, beyond $700, the customer picks it up again. So
okay.
it's a mechanism by which you can a car 12 years or older can be repaired or underneath that program. So,
okay, the question is how can one work and 50% of them do and 50% it's not going to be a bent pin. It's not going to be a fuse. I don't know what the answer is.
I don't know what the answer is because if he came to my shop, I'd plug it in and go, I don't see anything wrong. There's no codes, there's no check engine light, there's no whatever. I can't do anything.
Will they take your value, will they take your word for it when you take it to the waiver station?
No.
Okay.
No, because it still needs to plug into their machine.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah. Tom has the backdoor key, so they won't take it from you, Tom, and they won't. You can plug in your scanner and show them that it works, but they have to plug it into theirs to get it through Waveform.
I haven't had that exact scenario come up. All I can do is try.
Yeah, and for me, this is the same way. I've never heard of that before.
I've never heard of that.
When did they start the emission program? 74?
Here in Arizona?
Yeah.
I know it was 75 for sure.
Okay, well, we were in the gas station
business. One thing they did say is that the handheld scanner provides its own power, and when they plug it in, they're not able to get power from the vehicle into their plug.
And both of us are shaking our head no.
Not on the little handheld Mac or whatever it is.
Yeah. No, we don't. That obviously you got somebody that probably doesn't have gray hair like the two of us and probably doesn't have 60, 80 years of experience like the two of us. There's going to be a power and a ground in there, so we're going to fire up our scanners. You know, it's one of those things where we go left and they said this, and we go right and they said this, and all this other kind of stuff. So what part of town do you live in?
43rd and Bell, so I was wondering if I could bring it by Kurt's place.
Right, that certainly. I can tell you Eric and Kurt can figure this out. I mean, I know that for sure. I don't know how much they're going to charge you, but I'm telling you, Eric is probably one of the youngest masters I've ever met in my life. This kid is just, he is 10 times smarter than I am. So when you go there, just talk to Eric and tell him Salem says there's not a prayer, there's not a chance in hell that you're going to be able to fix this. So wave the red flag.
Where are they located or telephone number?
Bell Road, northeast corner. Kurtz Automotive with a C. Okay? ALDL 107. That's Police Talk. Ron, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I got a 2000 Silverado. I took it to a shop to get my AC fixed. It blows, but no cool. Anyway, they give me a quote of $2,100. What do you guys think of that?
I think they're replacing the entire system. Tom?
What?
Well, if it's, let's just say it's an air conditioning overhaul, it used to be probably in the $1,400, $1,500 range. But it needs to be diagnosed first. Is it out of Freon? Is the compressor bad? Are the air doors in the dash such?
Go
what
ahead.
They said was they found the orifice tube. They said it needs a compressor, condenser, dryer,
evaporator. Okay,
evaporator.
Tom.
No, they didn't say evaporator.
Well, it's got to be. They got a condenser and evaporator for $2,100. They got a compressor and they got a flush. And they got all that. Like Tom said, that $2,100 is more than we're imagining. Go ahead, Tommy.
And with $2,100, I got to say they've got an evaporator in there.
Okay. So of all the AC units with an orifice tube that you do, how often do you do this full-blown bumper-to-bumper repair?
1% of the time, it would only be because it leaks.
Okay.
And it's probably less than that.
Okay. We have the ability, to answer your question real simply, we have the ability, Ron, to flush out the condenser and flush out the evaporator, and us gray-haired guys know when it's not possible. We start blowing it out and we get, you know, pieces of starters and alternators and we get all this trash coming out. And we know that we're never going to get all the metal out of it. And the orifice tube is the small filter that passes refrigerant from the compressor to the evaporator to the condenser. So it's one of those things that it's hard to second guess them. And I think this is cover your butt kind of estimate. We're going to bid you for everything, but to cover your butt, unless they said that to you, then this is really something that you need a second opinion on. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Did they take the orifice tube out and did they give it to you?
No, actually they must have put it back in because they put a charge in it. It's actually working right now.
I say take it from that shop because... Tom, would you have ever done that? Put the old orifice tube back in and charged it back up?
Nope, not.
No, I can't say for sure that they did.
Okay,
but they put the old one back in. But
yeah. Well,
anyway, they did put a charge in it.
Okay, if they did a charge and they did an orifice tube, you should have it on your bill. You should have the orifice tube on your bill. So just look at your bill and look at the refrigerant. But to answer your question,
1 minute.
Tom answered your question. 1% of all the AC work he does he do from grill to dashboard, and I agree with that. So I don't care how dirty the orifice tube is. I'm going to try to flush them first. And with compressed air and flushing with a little solvent, usually I can get them clean. But Tom's right. I agree with him. If they're leaking, then it's different. So if we have a leak in the condenser or a leak in the evaporator, there's no fixing that. So good luck to you, Ron. Peter, unfortunately, I can't get you right now, but I can promise you that I'll get you about 4 minutes from now. So I'll get you right after the bottom of the hour break. So if you'll stick with us, you can. Now, I have four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive sitting next to me. And if your last name has an S in it, then you get free work for the rest of your life. That's Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. Ask for Tom and tell him that you know what Mark Salem said. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Tom Blackwell sitting here next to me, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. And he's got that whole northeast quadrant. So when you talk about northeast, you're talking about Scottsdale. You're talking about northeast Phoenix. You're talking about all that geographical area. So he covers that area really well for us. And we can't find another shop that has the qualifications and the... We have lots of qualifications. I'll just leave it at that. Let's go to Peter. Peter, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Oh, good morning, and what a day. I wanted to just jump back to the headlight or lens cover issue that you talked about earlier where the headlight was fogged.
Yes.
And I bought one of those kits, and it came with a little sanding pad, and it worked very well on one lens. And then through various times something happened and I wasn't able to finish. I didn't get to the second one. And then I lost that thing. It got thrown away or something happened. And I just wanted to mention that I finished the other one with toothpaste.
It
gave the car a nice minty smell, but it came out pretty good.
Well, then you should use some kind of a preparation H or something like that and rubbed it all over there.
I might try that on the tailpipe, but we'll see.
You know what? I like your answer. I really like your answer. I really like that. Tom, Mr. Preparation H himself, it's not really a matter of what it looks like today or next week. It's what it looks like 6 months from now, right? The headlight
and
polishing.
And we're talking when you're driving behind the car with the Preparation H thing, right?
No, we've gone past that, Tom.
To the front of the car.
No, we're okay. Going to the front of the car. Okay, we're talking about polishing the headlights.
Now, on to the real issue. When I accelerate in this car, it's a 2007 Hyundai Santa Fe GLS.
Okay.
And when I accelerate, I get a wobble. And it's only accelerating at low speed.
Okay, now stop.
I get
stop.
A,
it's time for questions. It's time for questions.
Okay.
What's wobbling? Is it the steering wheel? Is the steering wheel straight and the car's wobbling? So explain that to us.
Okay. It feels like the car is wobbling under my feet.
Okay.
But the steering wheel is fine.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Now,
go ahead.
Just from my own test, I thought, well, maybe something's wrong with the engine. So in neutral, when I push on the gas, no matter how fast or how slow I accelerate, it's perfectly smooth.
Yeah, but you got you're only testing a fourth of the car. We got the other three quarters of drivetrain that we clearly have to check. There's no conclusion that we can draw from your test. Go ahead.
I know. I just wanted to throw that in. It's something that I observed. This is a little piece of information that may help.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't wobble at higher speeds.
Okay.
Only at that very low speed, just starting out. And it wobbles worse if I try and accelerate fast.
Tom knows what it is. Go ahead, Tom.
I think you have one of two problems, or both motor mounts or a bad axle.
And both of those would vibrate everything but the steering wheel, and I agree. Mm-hmm. And then he says it gets worse with speed. So it's something that's definitely moving or spinning. It's not a tire.
Oh, no, it's,
I think he said it levels out or goes away at higher speeds without accelerating.
It goes away.
Okay.
But it gets worse if I try and accelerate fast.
Okay, all right. Well,
right from stop, it's, okay. It's much worse if I try and accelerate fast.
The answer on this is pretty simple. We can't fix it. Okay, we can't even come close to fixing it. But if you let someone drive it and you said, I want to show you how to make it happen, and then I'm going to go to the passenger seat and I want you to drive it, and I want you to, and I'll guide you how to do it, then we can answer all those questions about could it be this, could it be that, could it be this, after we fix it. So we don't want to spend a bunch of time eliminating stuff. We want to fix the problem. So that's really what it kind of boils down to, is we really need to fix the problem. So we appreciate your effort to give us the symptoms, but when you have something that comes and goes, we have to be able to duplicate it. And you just teach us how to duplicate it. But I think the most important part of this is you've got something that calling a wobble, which I think might be, to us, a vibration. And if it's a vibration and it comes and goes, then can that be hard?
Not when you go drive it.
Yeah, and especially if
a qualified guy's going to pick it up. He's going to know.
And especially if the customer can guide us to make it happen.
Which is perfect.
Show us and then let us drive and show us how to make it happen. So the diagnosting on that, I'm going to guess $75 to $100, depending on how long you're on the road and the technician's out of service.
Something. And whether he's got to get it up on the rack or not and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So less than $150 by far.
Okay.
In that range, no matter what it is, you can figure it out.
And once you diagnose it, then all we got is the diagnostic product and the labor to replace it in the part.
Is additional.
Yeah.
Correct.
And it is additional. Thank you for that. Okay, Harry, we're going to put you on hold, and then we're going to come back. Wait a minute. That was Peter, wasn't it?
Yeah, and now you're going to talk to Harry.
Yeah, yes. Well, I'm not going to talk to Harry right now because Harry always bugs me. And I think he's a retired fireman, and I think he's aspirated way too much smoke. Either that or...
Well, I'm glad that Harry didn't come first and Peter second.
We're taking a break. We'll be back right after this. Three minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're almost done here at the show, but we can still squeeze in another couple callers, 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics is in Sun City, been around a long time, and I know Chuck Nide and his son Derek, and I can tell you that it's the only shop in Sun City that I can recommend. They've been around for a long time, and I've known Chuck, his dad, Derek's dad, since 1972. We served time together. Nevertheless, Automotive Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, and I'm lying to you about serving in the military. Okay, Harry, you're up.
Top of the morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, good morning.
How you doing? You were saying about those F cars, and I assume you weren't talking about Fiats or Ferraris.
No, you're right, Harry. the F car.
The F car.
I call it the F car, and it just makes people mad, and I'm doing it with a smile on my face. But it's
they make fun. You a lot of money.
What's that? Harry?
They make you a lot of money.
No more than some other cars. Can you name a couple of other makes or models that we see a lot of? I mean, no more than some of the Chrysler products, and there's some imports out there that are 1%er cars, Peugeot. And
oh, my gosh. How about a Renault Alliance?
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah, or the AMC line. Remember the AMC line? We made a lot of money off those.
Yeah,
Pacers.
Ford Taurus.
Yeah, but we're showing our age right now, so we'll stop. Harry, tell us quickly what the worst car you owned was.
Ooh. I guess it was a Ford Escort.
Oh, well, that's Tom and I. We'll go with that.
A okay. Little four-cylinder, yeah.
All righty, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you were talking about a shortage of parts and stuff because of the COVID and the backup on the ports with the container ships.
Yeah.
Have you run into any problems with or know of anyone that's run into problems with counterfeit parts coming in or?
You
has
know
that always been an issue?
It's always been an issue. It's always been an issue. But they're not going to be put in a Federal Mogul box or a Denso box or a Toyota box. They're going to be just somebody that's – a lot of times they're off the Internet and stuff like that. Counterfeit parts are a problem, but really and truly they're not a big problem for me. How about you?
No, they're not a problem.
Yeah. And see, we're buying from guys that are big warehouses that are buying off the coast, and those guys have containers of parts. And so when you're talking, now these are places, Harry, you can't buy from, but Parts Authority, Factory Motor Parts, and to some extent we're buying from where they do retail, which is NAPA and AutoZone and O'Reilly's and CarQuest for quick, fast stuff. But I don't know that my radar has had a counterfeit part in the last 5 years.
Recently we had one, a Mustang rack and pinion from a vendor that was from out of the country, and there was, we didn't install it. We just found out about this after the car was brought in for the problem that we ultimately put a rack in that fixed. And he had two of these new racks from China, they were, and both of them were bad to the point where the vendor stopped carrying them. So I'm going to call that a counterfeit part, right?
Oh, okay, but in all fairness, it's hard to determine if they're counterfeit part, especially if they're working. And it's not tied to any particular vendor. Because I'm the investigator and you're the subject. When was the last time you had a counterfeit issue like this one?
I can't remember.
And that was my point. I didn't people to all of a sudden go to their shops and saying, "How do you know if they, you know, how do I know you're not putting counterfeit parts in it?" So I need to put that in perspective. For us, it's been years and years. So I think the counterfeit part really shows that some portion of the part failed that you've never seen in another part before. So the water pump impeller came off the water pump, which is something you might see every 10 years.
If that.
Yeah, thank
going
you.
Going in the radiator.
All righty, Harry, thank you very much. But I don't think on a 1 to 10 scale, with 10 being, boy, this is on my radar, and 1 means I haven't seen it since before my hair turned gray, counterfeit parts are really not that big of a deal.
Honestly, it's not on my radar.
At all.
At all.
Well, and then you're going to say it's because you buy from the guys that drive around in parts. Your parts vendors open up the trunk, and you buy stuff out of there.
No. Remember the seafood guys that came in? Those are the guys that have the parts in a different part of their trunk.
Okay,
those
I
are
got
the ones
you. Michael, you're up next. How can we help you, Michael?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Good to talk to you. I've talked to you many times over the years. In fact, I've been to just as many shops that are not on your list that are on, but they've all been good. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
I've got another question. I've talked to you about my 55 T-Bird that I bought 50 years ago this summer.
Okay.
And I was wondering, Mr. Blackwell might have any information about, like, a porous teapot carburetor?
A porous? Is that what you said?
Porous? Mm-hmm.
I think he's saying he has a porous carburetor. Is that what you're saying? You're leaking through the metal?
Yeah, it's seeping through.
Okay. Yeah, when those things were casted back in the day, depending on what the temperature was, what the material was that they used to cast it in, yeah, I've seen that before.
Can you fix it?
Yeah, we can fix it.
How?
There's a product I've used that on the, and it's usually on the underside of the bowl, that will seal that. But not very often does it work, I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
You know, we've had to go get another float bowl for it or
right.
whatever, and that would be the part, because those carburetors had tags on them that identified if it was a numbers matching. It had the tag that came on the carburetor when it was new, and that's the most important piece of that puzzle or that issue, especially if you want to keep the car original.
Okay.
It is.
We're fixing those either by epoxy on the inside or epoxy on the outside. And we're having pretty good luck with them, but it really depends on the guy that's doing it and how clean he got the bowl before he started working on it.
Let me tell you about the epoxy and the issues I've had on the inside of the carburetor.
Okay.
When that material was casted, especially with the bronze content that some of those had in it, bronze is a material that inherently has a lubricating element to it.
Okay.
The fuel gets underneath of it, it cycles the heat, and it pops the epoxy. That's been my experience.
Okay.
So you're saying moderate experience? Moderate experience would be mine too.
I mean, we're running across this once every 5 years. It's not that big of a deal, and every once in a while you find a carburetor that's got some problem with it that you're gonna. It's a matter of communication. we can wait for the rest of our lives until we can find a carburetor for you, or we can change you from a two-barrel to a four-barrel. We've got all these different options, or we can try this backyard repair that's been successful 60-70% of the time.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we would do.
Let me tell you something I heard the other day. Holley carburetors, you know how the bowls warp?
Uh-huh.
I got a guy that says you can straighten them, and it's like a chiropractor. You put it in a jig where it's got a flat bottom and a flat top, and you put it in a press, and you do it till it cracks. And I said, well, how do you know you haven't cracked the bowl? And he goes, it's just like a chiropractor. So we tried it, and the first time it worked. I don't want to do that on a regular basis because I think the risk is much more than the reward. But, why couldn't you lightly sand or sandblast that area and then put epoxy on it? Because you said you put epoxy on it and you're fixing it. So are you going on the inside or the outside?
I've always done it on the outside. I have. Okay. There's not material I've found that works well on the inside for a long period of time.
Okay.
And when I say long, like, you don't drive your car every day, your 55 T-Bird. It's something that you use, you set it in the garage. Maybe it sits there and you go back east during the summer and you come back in the winter. The car sits there with fuel in it for that long period of time. There's no time where it can cycle heat, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold. Now all of a sudden you get here in the wintertime, you start driving it, all of a sudden the epoxy breaks loose and you have that in the float bowl. That's generally what has happened to me.
Okay. All right. That's why we're together, is because sometimes the shop owners have just a slightly different experience with what are they called? Backyard repairs.
We call them mechanics. We got mechanics wire.
Oh.
And we have duct tape.
Okay.
I think
you should just take a carburetor and get a torch and just kind of heat that area up and let it bleed all this stuff that you say that my epoxy won't hold. Uh-huh. And then after you get it like red hot, and hope you don't melt the bowl.
Yeah, and then you get melted out, and then that's a whole other issue that you got to deal with. You have to go in and get some dinner from Mama, and then come back out and start on her again.
Yeah, if there's numbers on this carburetor, I'm quite sure you and I could find that bowl somewhere. But here's the question. The used bowl we find, is it better or worse than the one we got in our hand?
Well,
that's the hard part.
Yep, that's it.
That's the hard part. Okay, you got the best of both worlds, Michael. That's the best we can offer you. Of course, it is an F car, and if you have full insurance, a road flare by the gas tank would solve your problems. I'm just kidding you, of course.
Okay. And, thanks, Mark.
Okay, I got to admit to everybody, my wife drives an Edge, and she loves the Edge, and she's got 120,000 miles on it. Alan just put some fancy tires and wheels on it. She thinks it's the best car she's ever owned. And there's no way I'm going to talk her out of it. I'm thinking an Explorer a little bit bigger or something like that. She is adamant. But her dad was a Ford guy, too, but he fell off of a tall building and hit his head many years ago, and I'm thinking that that's probably somewhat related to the Ford part of the family.
I think it's how she wants to remember her father.
That's it.
Before he fell.
Thank you for that.
Before he fell. And you know what? There's an economic upside to this.
Mm-hmm.
There's more money for you to be able to get counseling after leaving the hospital in a gown that had a slit in the back of it.
And you were walking behind me, pushing on me.
Like I said.
And I object to where your hands were at because I'm questioning whether
or
not...
I'm getting benefit from this, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Preparation H.
Okay, goodbye, Tom. And we got any other callers?
Lines are open.
Lines are wide open. Okay, so let's go over again some self-defense stuff. Women handle this much better than men do. So the women, I tell the women, have them write it down, have them be specific on the estimate, have them sign it and put their phone number or staple their card to it. If this is a bunch of crap that doesn't need to be done, you're not going to get that.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, I think you'll agree, today with pictures, we can take a picture of the problem and send it to the customer.
And the picture is worth 8,000 words.
Well, and I like the ones before and after. Here's your rack, and it's leaking from both ends. This is your rack. Now, this is the new one we put on. So this is what it looked like before. This is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Look at this tight picture of the boot. Now, watch. It's a movie. Watch when I squeeze the boot. All this fluid comes out of it. Well, here's the new one. No fluid. How do you like the sound effects?
I'm back to the hospital.
Yeah, well, you're going to get off. You're going to get off the hospital gown pretty damn quick. 2005, I got bucked off a horse, and we went over backwards, and my head hit the ground, and the horse's head hit the front of mine, split my head in half. My brains all fell out. Blackwell was there to kind of scoop them up out of the dirt. And no, you weren't there. I ended up in the hospital, and
right.
I was
and then
out
I came
of service
with the epoxy
for 6 months.
And helped you out, put it back together again.
I still have that horse. And let me tell you the end of the story. The end of the story is my wife calls the vet. Her name is Vicky. I love her like a sister. And she says, go put Splash down. And so I'm in serious condition. And they found out later my head's empty anyway. So Vicky goes and looks at the horse, and she calls Renee, and she says, I'm not going to put Splash down. First of all, it's Mark's favorite horse. And he didn't birth it, but he was there during the birth of the horse. Number two, he has a bad infected tooth. And I know Mark shook the reins. And I did. And I said, come on, let's go. And he shook his head left and right like, no. And so I touched him with my heels, and he didn't move. And so you have the reins in your hand, and you just kind of up and down, snap them. And we went over backwards together. So she says, no, he's got an impacted tooth. And Mark rattled that bit in his mouth, and he just blew up. So it was one of those things. I did lose a few IQ somewhere in that transition.
You're opening up for a whole lot of material here.
I know, but we only have 46 seconds, and I'm going to just turn off your microphone, so now you can't talk at all. Nevertheless, mark at marksalem.com. If you have a car question, I'm always willing to answer it. And if you'll put your phone number in there, sometimes you don't give me enough information, so it's important for me to ask questions. When the vibration occurs, is it in the steering wheel or in the seat of your pants? When the car blows cold air and blows hot air otherwise, is that during the day or the night? Is that first thing in the morning? Is that, you know, halfway through the afternoon? So if you'll put your phone number in there, I'll call you. And I always call from a blocked line. And I call from a blocked line to Blackwell, and I don't answer him either. So mark at marksalem.com, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway.